my brothers and my sisters on today. For just a few moments, we are going to speak on breaking the chains of sin. This is what the sacrifice was for. It was for each and every one of our sin. For Christ himself broke the chain of sin. So today, for just a few moments, we're going to deal with our sin and our failure. As we know that sin is an obvious failure for us, but what God would hope is not that we would dwell on our failures, but that we'd rather learn something from them. In fact, we must know that before we become buried in guilt, we also need to keep in mind our story as we are on a tough topic today of sin. You see, because I want us to understand just a synopsis on where I'm going, if you will. I want to just start with a little brief story that I heard growing up. And it's about a Louisiana farmer whose favorite mule fell into a well. And after he studied the situation, the farmer came to the conclusion that he could not pull the mule out. So he figured that he may as well bury the mule in the well. And it would be the humane thing to do. So what did he do? He went and he got a truckload of dirt and he backed up to the well and he dumped the dirt on top of the mule at the bottom of the well. But to his surprise, when the dirt hit the mule, it started snorting and it started trampling, and as it trampled, it began to work itself up on top of the dirt. So the farmer continued to pour dirt in the well until the mule snorted and trampled its way to the top. Hallelujah. It then walked away a bit dirtier but a bit wiser mule, and what was intended to bury him turned out to be its salvation. My brothers and my sisters, I just want you to really grasp that being stuck in a deep well of sin and its consequences, it is a terrible experience, but there is something that we can learn from it. Number one is the destructive power of sin. I do pray that each of you would go and read Romans chapter 8, because this is where I'm coming from for this. And part of the beauty of Romans 8 comes from its position in Paul's letter. In the preceding chapter, Paul took a look at his own life and his own shortcomings, and he began to write words that go a little like this. He says, "For I do not understand what I am doing, because I do not practice what I want to do, but I do what I hate. For I know that nothing good lives in me, that is, in my flesh. For the desire to do what is good is with me, but there is no ability to do it. For I do not do the good that I want to do, but I practice the evil that I do not want to do." Then he goes on to say, "What a wretched man that I am. Who will rescue me from this dying body?" My God, my God, if Paul had ended his letter at that moment, it would have been one of the most depressing things that any of us had ever read. But I venture to say, not necessarily because we're disappointed in Paul, but because it rings so true in each and every one of us, that we know that each of us, that we are all sinful people. We must know that each of us are sinful people. If you don't believe me, everybody who has been on top can find themselves at the bottom. If not, you can research it yourself. That there was a Fortune 500 company, and the company was ready to promote a 30-year-old from vice president to president. And the young man, he was a very impressive businessman who impressed everyone that he came upon. But upon completing the final interview process, the young man, he had no idea that he had already been selected for the job. And when he went out to lunch that day, he figured that he was out alone, but he was unintentionally followed by some of his colleagues. And as they watched him closely as he went to lunch, and they were all ready for the celebration to begin of him being their new president, they witnessed him in an act of something that they did not want to see. So what was a situation that should have been filled with joy was instead marked by anger. And instead of being promoted to president, the young man's promising future and all that he had was what he was fired. And we have to understand that the smallest of our sin is costly, far more costly than any of us have ever imagined. Thankfully, Paul turned his attention away from his own sin and back to the one who set him free from sin. The joy he had in writing of God's grace is what makes Romans 8 one of the greatest chapters in all the Bible, because we learn through this that God had broken the power of sin. Paul says that God had already set him free from the law of sin and death. That's in Romans 8 verse 1. And that while he couldn't beat the sin that had hounded him, God did by sending his own son. Thank God for the blood. This is coming from a chapter 7 man who still battled sinful leanings and learnings. A man who often, very often, lost those battles just as well as you and I. And this should be a relief to us, because God has already done the hard work in tackling the sin problem. Because of the cross, sin is defeated. Satan's greatest threat to any of us is a permanent separation from God because of our own sin. Satan sets the trap and hope will fall into it. But when Jesus gave his life up for the sake of sinners, the ultimate power of sin was defeated once and for all. Even though all of us have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, when we accept the gift of God's grace, we can still experience God's glory as if we had never sinned at all. If you don't believe me, I want to take you down to a close story with myself. My children, they used to have a hamster, and this hamster, he had a very nice cage. He had all the toys in this cage that you could possibly would want, but when he had a wheel, but the hamster, he would refuse to put himself inside the wheel and run in the wheel. Instead, he came up with what he would think is a better idea. He would climb on top of the wheel and turn over on his back and stretch out and gradually turn the wheels, and then his entire body would end up rolling with it head first, and the wheel would pick up speed and spin faster and faster until finally it would throw the hamster, and the hamster would smack his head at the bottom of the cage. And how ironic that the hamster would get up, shake himself off, apparently hurt from the unexpected blow of his head, and do it all again. Now, I know that's a little bit funny, but why would a hamster who has everything he needs disregard the wheel's proper use to do something that only hurts himself? And why, even after that, would he do it again? My biggest question is this: why do humans, who are supposed to be smarter than a hamster, sometimes do the exact same thing? That we will do something that is not intentional, but we do it because that's the way that we want to do it, and we see it does not work out, yet we go back and do it again. My God, I'm telling you, if you can just understand that everything that we are doing, and God still accepts us as we are. If you don't believe me, Google Tom Watson Sr., who founded IBM. You can imagine the money, the investments, the experiments this man and his multi-billion-dollar company have made through the years. But years ago, when $1 million was still $1 million, Watson had a top junior executive who spent $12 million of the company's money on a venture That failed. The executive put his resignation on Watson's desk, saying, "I'm sure that you want my resignation." But Watson said, "No, I don't want your resignation." He said, "How could you think that I want your resignation?" He said that I just wasted $12 million. Watson responded to him, "I've spent $12 million educating you. It's about time that you get up to work." Isn't that just like God, that what we thought was going to be our demise is what God is going to use to bring us up? God will not accept our resignation, and instead he'll accept your failures as part of the investment that he has made for each and every one of us. God has said that it is time for us to put in work, and it is time for our spiritual growth to take place, but now he expects us to get to work. So now let's do it. What I want you to know is that no matter what we do, there is room to work. And until you are working, that requires sweat and toil. The best part of your game plan is to know that it can be done. Sin does not have to have the power to hold you prisoner. God has broken the chains. It's what Jesus had in mind when he cried those last words on the cross, when he said, "It indeed is finished," that the sin would not hold dominion over you. So you have to have the power. My third and final point is to refuse the power of sin. This instruction from Romans 8 sounds like a familiar chord from other Bible teachings, according to what Paul writes here in verses 5 and 8. "Now the mind set on what our sinful nature desires will live by that sinful nature. On the other hand, if we set our mind on what the Spirit desires, we will live according to the Spirit." Our mindset leads to death, and the other leads to life. One mindset leads to hostility with God, but the other leads to peace with God. The very first psalm teaches the same principle, only with a different word picture. It says, "How happy is the man who does not follow the advice of the wicked, or take the path of sinners, or join a group of mockers. Instead, his delight is in the Lord's instruction, and he meditates on it day and night." My God, a man who meditates on the word of God will delight himself and God. But a man who doesn't control his mind will slow first to a walk with the counsel of the wicked, then he will stand in the way of sinners, and finally he will sit in the seat of the mockers. We should run a good race for Christ, not even slowing to a walk. James writes, "No one undergoing a trial should say, 'I'm being tempted by God.' For God is not tempted by evil, and he himself doesn't tempt anyone. But each person is tempted when he is drawn away and enticed by his own evil desires. Then after desire has conceived, it gives birth to sin. And when sin is fully grown, it gives birth to death." My God, if you could go backwards through the progressive steps from death to sin, from sin to the birth of sin, from the birth of sin to the desire to sin, you'll come to the point of your own evil desires. If at that point we take hold of the mind of Christ, we can break the progressive chain and stop the destructive cycle. Paul says that the key is to set our mind on what the Spirit desires. Is that a bad thing? The tempter would have us to think that we've just missed out on some great experiences, that God has actually punished us for leaving a life of sin. But picture this: when a man and woman fall in love and get married, they automatically stop some practices and start some others. For instance, both of them, the husband and the wife, they stop dating other people and start enjoying the companionship for which each of them has long searched for. You'll find in Romans 12 and 2, Paul writes these words to those who want to please God. He says, "Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind." Your transformed mind will make all the difference when it comes to enjoying or despising your walk with Christ. The power to break free from the chain of sin, the power that God has already provided, is already available to us right now. My brothers and my sister, that is my word to you on today, on breaking the chain of sin. God has made it readily available to you and to me. So let's put it to work. Let us turn away from sin and turn towards what the Spirit of God would have us to do. My brothers and my sisters, I will always keep you with this, and I will always tell you this, that when you start pleasing God, everything falls in order. As I leave you with all the time, and I leave you with right now, is this: the will of God will never take you where the grace of God cannot keep you. My brothers and my sisters, be blessed. I love each and every one of you.